Good day and welcome to today's iPro Long-Term Home Health Care Shared Learning Sessions conference call. This call is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to Ms. Butterfield. Please go ahead, Ms. Butterfield.
Thank you, Jody. Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for joining us for today's presentation, and this is part of a series of educational offerings addressing the clinical strategies in the long-term care setting to reduce avoidable acute care hospitalizations. And as you know, these presentations are structured as shared learning sessions to allow the New York State long-term care providers who have been able to demonstrate success in reducing avoidable acute care hospitalizations in the long-term care patient population to share their stories and to afford you the opportunity to hear directly from these high-performing agencies on how they approach the initiative, some of the barriers they encountered, and how they approach those barriers to achieve positive end results. Now, today's call is going to be conducted in a slightly different format. Our guest speaker from Lutheran Long-Term Home Health is not going to be able to join us for the call due to some extenuating circumstances, but has been kind enough to share their story with us. So Chris Stiegel from our iPro Home Health project team is going to share their information with you. And then following that, I'm going to provide you with an overview of the Home Health Quality Initiative's National Campaign Intervention Package Number 2, which addresses the emergency care planning strategy. Those of you who registered for today's call were forwarded via email a copy of the handouts and the presentation slides that I'm going to be talking to, and you also should have received a program evaluation form. If you didn't register and did not receive a copy of the slides and evaluation form, they are posted to the iPro website at https://providers.ipro.org/index/home health. And if you scroll down to the upcoming events section, you're going to see a link to today's call, and the presentation and all of the materials are posted there for you to download. As a reminder, the conference call session is being taped, and we're going to be posting it to the same home health section of our website. And it will be in the past events section, and you can access that for future review if you have any other staff within the organization that you'd like here to listen to the call. As Jody mentioned, all of your lines are currently muted, but following the presentations, we're going to be opening the lines up for questions, any comments, and some further discussion. And then, as we always do with these long-term care agency calls, at the end of today's presentation, we're going to open the lines up. I'll share with you some current updates as far as where we are at New York with our acute care hospitalization and oral medication management rates, and just some program updates. So at this time, I'd like to turn the call over to my colleague, Christine Stiegel, and she's going to share with you the strategies that Lutheran Long-Term Home Health has implemented successfully.
Thank you, Sarah. When Lutheran Long-Term Care developed their plan of action, they developed it for remediation, and they identified as a problem inadequate teaching tools for skilled nursing instruction and or reinforcement on disease processes, including signs and symptoms to report and when to alert the skilled nurse or physician. The best practices that they implemented or they developed were related to reinstructing or reinforcing the agency's 24-hour on-call procedure with the patients. They implemented the disease-specific emergency care plans. They also implemented an additional visit when a patient experienced a deterioration of status. And they also wanted to improve the communication between the nurse and the physician when a deterioration occurred. And that was really the integral part of their plan of action, was with the communication with the physician. And what the agency decided to do to improve that communication was they decided to purchase cell phones. And the director developed an analysis of the cost or a business plan and found that to purchase cell phones was only about $20 more per phone for the agency. So they felt that that was a good investment in their nurses to increase the communication, so they decided to implement the cell phone policy. So you can see, if you pull out the cell phone policy, you can see that it was really designed to decrease acute care hospitalization rates by facilitating nurse and physician communication. And it really made the nurses, it really highlighted their emphasis on increasing that communication. It also provided, which was nice, that it provided a way for, if the nurse was concerned about their personal safety in some situations, that they had the cell phone that they could use for that. And you can see if you reviewed the cell phone policy, they did also address personal use of the cell phone. And I guess I would say that they probably tracked that closely. But anyways, what they found was that when the nurse was visiting the patient's home and called the physician, if they told the physician that they were at the patient's home and left their cell phone number, that the physician would call back very often during that nursing visit. So the nurse could immediately intervene and implement the new physician orders. And they found that the patients did improve or that they averted a rehospitalization. The agency did not indicate that they had any resistance or barriers in implementing this policy, but found that their really acute care hospitalization rate had decreased. And that, now I'll turn this telephone call back to Sarah.
Jody, if you could open the lines up for questions. If you do have some questions, I realize that we may have to pose them to the representative at Lutheran to get you answers, but we'd be more than happy to do that. So if you could open the lines up, Jody, for any questions, quick.
Certainly, Ms. Butterfield. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you'd like to ask a question, please do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that is star 1, and we'll pause for just a moment.
I just want to point out as we're waiting that the materials that Chris was referencing were part of your handouts, and again, they're posted to the upcoming events section of our website. Lutheran Home Health was kind enough to share with us their protocol, their purpose and policy for the protocol also. Any questions, Jody?
Not at this time.
Okay, great. Okay, Jody, I think we'll turn the call. We'll transition over to the emergency care planning program. And for those of you who are the majority of the home health agencies in New York State, over 80% have joined the campaign thus far. The intervention package for the month of April, which was available as of April 2nd, is dedicated to emergency care planning. And as we promised when you enrolled in the campaign, we promised to review with you each month each of the intervention packages, provide an overview, and just sort of highlight the strategies that are included into the intervention package to get you thinking about if it's applicable to your organization and how you might design and implement the particular strategy. So for this call and the April 18th call, we're going to be talking about emergency care planning. And again, as a reminder, if you haven't yet downloaded the emergency care planning intervention package, it is posted to the HHQI National Campaign website at www.homehealthquality.org. And as you'll see listed on slide 2, as you know, IPRO and the New York State Associations that have home care providers have all partnered together for this initiative as the New York State Local Area Network of Excellence, so thus that LANE logo that you see on slide number 2. And as you can also see there, the organizations that are partnered together for that LANE include the Continuing Care Leadership Coalition, the Healthcare Association of New York State, the Home Care Association of New York State, IPRO, and the New York State Association of Healthcare Providers. So we've all partnered together and are here to help you with the campaign and to be successful in obtaining the 5% relative improvement or greater that you're striving for the campaign. We're very excited, as I mentioned, that over 80% of our New York agencies, or equating to about 150 agencies out of 185, have registered for participation. And nationally, over 4,850 agencies are participating, and that's greater than 50% nationally. So definitely a lot of interest and a lot of work going on related to the campaign itself. I'm going to refer you to the last two slides in the packet at the end of the presentation, where we have listed our contact information here at IPRO and each of the representatives from the home care associations who are part of the initiative. So you have all of our contact information on those last two slides. I'm going to move on to slide number three, and we're going to look at the objectives for today's presentation. Last week, all of the New York State agencies that have registered for the campaign received their first agency-specific campaign report. And I know we shared previously a sample report, which really was the same format, but we know that often when you get your own data in front of you, it's more meaningful, and some questions may arise that were not thought of previously when you looked at that sample report. So even though we've looked at the reports before, I'm going to briefly review the HHQI campaign report and the origin of the agency-specific information that's provided to you on those reports. So that's the first thing that we'll do briefly. Then we'll provide an overview of the Emergency Care Planning Initiative and discuss some next steps for the New York State agencies that are participating in the campaign. I'm moving on to slide number four. And related to the monthly reports, they're agency-specific reports, as you know, if you've hopefully reviewed the ones that we sent to you that last week in March. We're going to be sending them to you each month at the end of each month in hard copy format, and we're going to be sending them just as we did this past month along with your IPRO agency trend report, because that provides you some additional data regarding type of agency breakdown by upstate and downstate region. Your agency campaign report, as I mentioned, will be in hard copy format. Unfortunately, we cannot send the campaign report itself via email. That was a request by CMS that it go hard copy and that it be sent via U.S. mail to the primary contact that your agency designated at the time that you registered for the national campaign. There was also included in the monthly, this first campaign report, a list of frequently asked questions. And what I'd like to do as we take a look at some of the screenshots of each of the pages of the report is talk about some of the most common related questions. So we're going to look at slide number five. And you see the first page of the report provided there for a screenshot for you. Now, this type of report, at least the trend part, should be familiar to you because it's also part of the IPRO agency trend report that you get each month. But you'll notice there's two different trend lines. And the one trend line, as you'll see designated there with the triangles, is your agency's actual acute care hospitalization rate. And this is the acute care hospitalization rate from your agency's OBQI outcome report. So it's the percentage of all eligible home health episodes that ended in hospitalization out of all completed home health episodes within each given 12-month period. Remember, when we're talking about episodes for OBQI, we're talking about patients that in that 12-month reporting period had a start of care or resumption of care and an endpoint that either was a transfer to the hospital or discharge from the agency. Okay, so there's your actual acute care hospitalization rate. You also see a trend line there designated by a little square rectangle box, and that designates your risk-adjusted acute care hospitalization rate. This is most comparable to the rate that you see posted on your home health compare report, and it is also exactly what you see on the IPRO agency trend report that we send to you. It's your acute care hospitalization rate plus a risk adjustment factor. And what that risk adjustment factor does is takes into account the differences between your agency's patient population and the national patient population. So if your risk-adjusted acute care hospitalization rate is greater than or higher than the actual acute care hospitalization rate for your agency, It means that your agency's patients are expected to be hospitalized less frequently than the average national patient. So again, that's if your risk-adjusted rate is higher than your actual. Conversely, if your agency's risk-adjusted rate is lower than your actual acute care hospitalization rate, it means that your agency's patients are expected to be hospitalized more frequently than the average national patient. In other words, because your agency expected to perform worse than the national average, because of the risk model, your risk-adjusted score looks better than your actual score. And we're here, too, if that sounds confusing to you, we're here, too, to you can give us a call and we'll walk you through the report itself for you. And again, those are part of the frequently asked questions that were included with the report. Now, if you have a not applicable or an N/A listed for your actual or risk-adjusted rate, and also it could show up in the percentile rankings, that's because the percentile rankings are based on home health agencies that have a minimum of 20 episodes of care on the acute care hospitalization measure in each 12-month period. So if you're one of those agencies that has less than 20 completed episodes, your rate is going to be displayed as not applicable. And when we looked at the reports, we really didn't come across any ones that we saw that had the not applicable, but just in case that's showing up on your report, that's what that indicates. For that acute care hospitalization time, 12-month time period, you did not have 20 patients or 20 episodes of care in the acute care hospitalization quality measure. The second page of the monthly report provides information related to OASIS assessments. So keep in mind, the first page of the report, based on OBQI, based on Home Health Compare, it's based on patients' information that had a start of care, resumption of care, and an endpoint to care in that 12-month period of time. When you're looking at that second page of the report, all of that information relates specifically to your OASIS assessments. So you'll see the number of monthly hospitalizations out of total transfers and discharges. And when we showed you the sample report, this came up at one of the conferences, someone asked why there was a zero that showed up there. And for that agency did not have any OASIS assessments related to either transfers or discharges, so that's why a zero showed there. You also get the percentage of hospital admissions by urgency, reason, and day of the week, and you can see on your slide which of the MOOC questions that relates to. And also, reason for hospitalization, we're going to be talking about that other category, and you also see hospitalizations by the day of the week. Now, when we look at those reports, we do notice on a number of agencies that other category is very high, and so we're going to be relating that to what we're talking about today. On slide number 7, you can see a screenshot of that second page of the report. And one of the most commonly asked questions about this particular pages of the report is the difference between the actual and risk-adjusted rates on page 1 and the monthly hospitalization rates on page 2. Now, as I mentioned before, one relates to your OBQI reports, one relates to your OASIS assessments. So the monthly rates on page 2 of the report are based on all of your OASIS assessments submitted by the agency in each given month. As compared to what's on page 1, it's based on all of those patients that had a completed episode of care during that 12-month period of time. So page 2 gives you a monthly breakdown based on OASIS assessments. And it could be that month to month you'll see a small number of assessments in the monthly rates, but what you're going to be looking for is, as you get additional data going forward, those hospitalizations month to month showing a decrease in that first line there in the grid. As I mentioned before on page 2, the reason for hospitalization table, the other category, there are many agencies that have a large percentage of sometimes 50 and 60% of reasons being located in that other category. And we really strongly encourage you to address the reasons why, which whether the hospital is not giving you the information that you're looking for, and we have some strategies related to HIPAA we can share with you. Whatever it is that's causing the agency not to be aware of what the patient was actually hospitalized for, if you have a large number there, you really need to sort of drill down and try and see what that falls into that other category, especially if you're using a risk assessment tool, which was last month. If you have 50% of your hospitalizations falling into the other category, you need to know what those are to be able to make sure that you have that built into your risk assessment tool. One of the other reasons is that the patients are going to the hospital emergency room without notifying the agencies. And that's actually a great segue into the emergency care planning intervention. Again, if you have any questions and you want us to review your report specifically with us, we'll be happy to do that. Just give us a call. So let's talk about the monthly intervention packages first, and then we'll move on to emergency care planning. I just want to remind those of you in the campaign, as you can see on slide number 8, that each of the intervention packages are going to be posted the first business day of each month to the campaign website. If you visited there, you'll know that it's posted there as a whole document and also by individual track sections. You can also download information by discipline. And the documents that, such as this month, the emergency care plan tools are posted in Word format so that you can customize them for your agency, add your logo, phone numbers, etc. So let's look at emergency care planning. We're going to move to slide number 9 and look at the definition of emergency care planning. And again, the information contained within this presentation is all part of that intervention package. But what we tried to do is pull out some of the most important parts. So the definition of emergency care planning, the established agency process that includes all activities, tools, and policies and procedures that are used to assist clinicians with educating patients and caregivers on what actions to take if a medical problem or change in condition occurs. And what the emergency care plan allows is assisting the patient and caregiver in determining who, what, where, when, and how to respond to changes in health status. And you'll notice as we move through the slides that we've included in all areas both patient and caregiver. Sometimes what the data has shown is that for many agencies, patients that have a caregiver in the home, those patients have a higher rate of hospitalization than those without. And it's very important to, when you're doing self-management or emergency care planning, to include both the patient and caregiver if they're part of that home environment. Now, the caveat to emergency care planning intervention in comparison to the risk assessment tool that you looked at this past month, the risk assessment tool really involves time for design and development. You really need to know what's driving your acute care hospitalization rate. You have to do some investigation into what types of patients are being hospitalized to know what types of risk factors to build into your tool. It takes time to test the tool and then make sure that the staff are using it correctly. And in some instances, you have to redesign the tool and retest it. Now, for the emergency care plan, you have templates provided in the intervention packages. The design itself is not as involved as the risk assessment tool, but the challenge with the emergency care planning tools is really getting the staff to implement them at start of care, resumption of care, and every visit. It really involves all of your staff, all disciplines, and it also needs review of patient caregiver understanding. So it's not just something that's handed to the patient at start of care, resumption of care. It takes some work and teaching and assessment of understanding. And sometimes that can be the most challenging piece, is getting the staff buy-in and having them carry it out successfully. So if you're looking at emergency care planning, the difference in terminology that you'll see in the packet, there's emergency care planning, and there's the patient emergency care plan. The difference in terminology is that the emergency care plan, care planning is the overall process. And then think of the patient emergency care plan as the specific patient tool that's used to carry out that process. I'm on slide number 11, and you'll note the definition of the patient emergency plan. a written plan that helps the patient caregiver to identify emergent health problems and to determine who to call regarding that problem, whether it be the home care agency, the physician, or EMS. And the patient emergency plan, really think of it as the foundation of the emergency care planning process. It's what's at the frontline point of care for the patient and the education and information that's provided to the patient. Now, the purpose of the patient emergency plan is that by educating the patient and caregiver to identify changes in condition early on, and when those conditions are noted early on, to call the agency first, it allows the agency the opportunity to intervene, which may help keep the patient at home. Now, we're talking about subtle changes in condition. A lot of this relates to self-management. Some of this will seem similar to you, those of you that are using the red, yellow, green zone self-management tools. It's really providing education to the patient to help them be able to identify when they've had a change in condition, hopefully early on enough that they'll be able to intervene with the agency, except in true emergencies when they really do need to either go to the physician or dial 911 to go to the emergency room. So we're really trying to catch changes in condition early on with the ability of the agency to intervene for the patient. So starting on slide 14, we have some examples of the emergency plans, and these are all part of the intervention package. They're actually posted separately on the website, and hopefully many of you have gone in and taken a look at them specifically, but we wanted to highlight both of them for you in today's presentation. The emergency information plan that you see on slide number 14, many of the agencies have used this in the past and included it in start of care packets. But just want to take a walk through and highlight some of the differences from this and some of the ones that we've seen some of the agencies using over the past year or so. This specific tool that you see here on slide 14 lists the agency information, the phone number, and the other important numbers, the doctor, hospital, ambulance, and fire. And as you look at this example, as I mentioned when we reviewed some of the ones our agencies have been using, what stands out is the provision of the after-hours number and all of the important, all-important information at the bottom that a nurse is available 24 hours a day to assist you. And in the event of an emergency, please call 911 immediately. When you look at this tool and as you walk through this package, we encourage you to really look at the one you're currently using. One of our agencies shared with us that when they took a look at theirs, dial 911 was like in 55 font at the top of the page, and their agency phone number was in about 14 font at the bottom. So the first thing that the patient really saw in the case of emergency or understood was that they were to dial 911. On some of the others that we've looked at, the wording on it really sort of discourages patients from calling the agency after 4 p.m. So if you look at the format here, it's very short and sweet, very concise. It has all of the essential information, very large font so that the patient can read it easily in the case of an emergency. And it gives the message clearly up front, the home health agency numbers, who to call after that time, and that there is somebody available to help them 24 hours a day. So it encourages them to contact the agency. Slide number 15 provides a more customized, although generic, emergency plan. And again, this is similar to the red, yellow, green zone tools that many of you are using, but again, more generic. This is the first page of the three-page sample that's provided to you in the intervention package. And as you can see, there's a column as far as what to do. It's very colorful when you print it off. The middle column is highlighted at the top in yellow of when to call my home health agency. And the third column is highlighted in red of when to call 911. And as you walk through this, very simple to understand. I have trouble breathing, for instance. Your cough is worse. It's harder to breathe when you lay flat. Chest tightness relieved by rest or medication. The inhalers aren't working. Or they've noticed a change in color, thickness, or odor of sputum. So the agency, it encourages the patient, if they see those particular areas, to call the agency versus that last column, call 911, I can't breathe, my skin is gray or fingertips are blue, fainting episodes, or I've had frothy sputum. And if you look above in the I Heart section, there's actually parameters that can be customized for the patient. And my blood pressure is above, so the parameters can be provided. You'll see that down there also in the fever category. So it really does customize and helps the patient understand what the agency can intervene on and what also is a true emergency. Now, as you look at both of those sample tools, you're going to note that they're designed using a symptom model as opposed to a medical model and designed to accommodate the patient perspective. So the focus is patient-centered and patient-identifiable terms that the patient can really understand and apply to themselves. The samples that are provided for agencies in the packet can be customized for patient population. And again, you can choose to use the entire tool. You can customize it, condense it, remove the icons, reformat it, whatever you feel would be most appropriate for your population. Also, I wanted to point out that these are really simply patient teaching tools. You're providing guidance on self-management to the patient and also to the caregiver. They do not replace the importance of clinician assessment, and you'll note down at the bottom of the tool on page slide 15 that there's this sort of a disclaimer in that the tool itself does not override patient caregiver decisions on when to seek care. In addition to that, it doesn't override our responsibilities as a care provider to assess the patient and make a determination. By all means, if you're not sure, the patient should go to the emergency room. Now, the sample templates, as I mentioned, are posted in Word format on the campaign website. You can go in there. You can customize them. And I just wanted to pull out from the package some important guidance when you're designing and customizing those for your agency. And you can see those listed on slide number 17. You want to be aware of the particular patient's risk factors, and that can be helpful in developing a more specific patient emergency plan. So this is not just such a tool that will be pulled out and given to all patients without perhaps putting blood pressure parameters on there or temperature or specific information for that patient. There is a little bit of very little customization involved. Important when you're designing it to also include all disciplines in designing a tool and also with the education of the tool. You want it to remain in a language or at a level where the patient can understand. And again, many of you have different like Spanish-speaking population, so definitely want to customize it for those particulars so that the patient and caregiver can understand what is listed there. Encourage to use large, clear font. And include pertinent agency information and clear guidelines that will enable your patients to reason through how to respond to a change in health status. And again, this plan is not just something that's going to be handed to the patient at start of care. There's some education of the patient and follow-up also required to make sure they understand and can implement the emergency plan. So once you've designed your tool, you want to keep in mind how important the implementation process is, as I mentioned before. The emergency plan tool must be used by all of your staff consistently, and that is at start of care, resumption of care, and also every visit, and all clinicians that are in contact with the patient. That includes your home health aides, OT, PT, anyone within your agency that comes in contact with the patient. The leadership part, leadership support, and staff buy-in are really essential for a successful implementation. To be able to hold the staff accountable for using the tool and making sure that they're reviewed to make sure the patient understands it every visit. Some of the agencies that are using the emergency plan and the self-management tools actually have a protocol as far as where this tool is posted in the patient's home. You don't want it to remain in the start of care folder on the nightstand or the coffee table in the living room, never to be looked at again. So, for instance, some of the agencies have purchased magnet with the agency's name and phone number and have posted the emergency plan right on the patient's freezer or refrigerator door. Each time they go to see the patient, the emergency plan is referred to, there's discussion with regarding it, and to make sure that the patient and caregiver really understand how the agency can be used to prevent a hospitalization. So you can be creative. That's one of the suggestions that we've heard from our agencies that they've had success with. That way it's upfront and something on the refrigerator that the patient sees every day, the caregiver sees every day, and it's not tucked away and hopefully will be used more readily. I'm moving on to slide number 19, and we're looking at still design and implementation. You want to make sure that when you're designing your tool, you're including all the disciplines in the design and also in the education regarding the tool. And this includes the home health aides. They're really the eyes and ears for the agency with the patient in the home. Reinforce your patient emergency plan with the patient and caregiver every visit and evaluate their understanding. And especially your support staff or clinicians within the agency can actually call patients with a scripted screening tool. It can be a very simple tool to ask the patient if they've received their emergency plan, where is it located in their home, do they understand how to use it, and understand how to call the agency. And again, that can be support staff. It doesn't have to be a clinician doing that. That way there's verification and also helps, especially in those first couple weeks of care, with a phone call to see how things are actually going in the home with the patients. Again, trying to prevent an avoidable hospitalization. Now, as you've heard us say many times, once you've implemented the tool, you have to make sure that it's being used, and it's being used correctly by all the staff. So to support your internal monitoring, we strongly encourage you to review 10 to 15 patient records on a monthly basis for evidence that the tool is being used, it's being provided, and it's being reinforced every visit. You can also take a look at your patients hospitalized the previous month to see if the patient caregiver notified the agency that the patient went into the hospital. That sort of will give you the perspective that the tool is working from the patient side. Patient understands it, patient contacted the agency, and again, this is for those not life-threatening situations. The other thing to look at on your report is, again, that other category. Do you see that starting to decrease because patients are sharing with you why they're going to the hospital, patient and caregiver, that information? After about a 2 to 3 month time period, if you're comfortable and you're looking at those 10 to 15 records and you're noticing that you've got 85-95% compliance, you're comfortable that the staff is using the tool appropriately, and that it's being reviewed and reinforced every visit, then trend your monitoring down to an every 6 month period of time. You don't want to get rid of it entirely because chances are something will happen that perhaps the tool won't be used effectively. So, you know, you can trend down to 6 months, but make sure that you're comfortable that it's being used. In addition to looking at the records, we mentioned the calls to the patients or caregivers, just to determine if the emergency plan was reviewed. Do they even know what you're talking about? If you decide that it's going to be posted on the refrigerator, ask them if it's there, if they have questions. And again, it's a good opportunity to reinforce what's on the plan. Okay, the next steps to consider. I'm on slide 21. These are all part of the leadership assessment section of the intervention package this month. Some important questions to consider for your agency and patients related to emergency care planning. The first, does your agency have a structured on-call program in place for after hours, weekend, and holidays? Now, we had heard from some agencies with regards to both this, the emergency care plan tool and the self-management tool, that staff were concerned about an increase in calls after hours. And what really happens was the reverse of that. The patient really understood when to call the agency and what particular areas the agency could impact. So those calls were coming before that 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock hours. It also has an impact. Some agencies were afraid to use this because of perhaps inappropriate calls, such as, you know, the home health aide needs to pick up such and so before they come tomorrow morning. When you're using this type of tool, it really does provide the patient with guidance in writing something to refer to know what is appropriate to notify the agency versus the physician versus a regular true emergency to go to 911. So it does provide the patients and empowers them to understand what is appropriate. Second question, does the agency provide regular education to the on-call staff related to interventions to reduce avoidable acute care hospitalizations? And I would add to that, do your on-call staff know who your high-risk patients are? If you're using a risk assessment tool and they get a call after hours, are they able to identify who your high-risk patients are? Are all of the disciplines responsible for education of emergency care planning with the patient and caregiver? You want to make sure, again, that these tools are reviewed with your all disciplines, OT, PT, home health aides. And do all patients have the necessary supplies or equipment? If you're expecting the patient to recognize when their blood pressure is within a certain parameter, do they have anything there for them to do blood pressure on themselves? Or if you're putting on there a particular weight, if they've, you know, not showing a less than a 2 to 3 pound weight gain, do they have an actual scale? Do they know how to use it? To really be able to self-assess and report a change in condition. So those are just some sort of next steps to consider. The emergency plan really is most effective when particularly there's an on-call structured program and there's some follow-up for the patient. And lastly, posted on the website is the poster that you see in screenshot on slide number 22, which is every visit, every patient, every contact, remind your patients to call me first. This was actually developed by one of the Tennessee Quality Improvement Organization, and this can be helpful to post throughout your agency, really to remind the staff that every time they see a patient, to reinforce that emergency plan and the importance that the call me first. And I think what Chris shared before, that Lutheran Home Care, the fact that, you know, the process with the telephone and the phone number for both the physician and the patient, really speaks to that also and supports that. So far in the campaign, and it's really hard to believe that we're into the second month of the intervention packages, you so far received resources and guidance on risk assessment and emergency care planning. And then next month in May, we're going to be focusing on medication management, which, as you all remember, is part of our New York statewide quality measure selected for focus and improvement. Our call to review that intervention package on medication management is scheduled for Wednesday, May 9th from 9 to 10 a.m. We sent out to everyone, both in hard copy and email, a second quarter calendar and registration form for those calls. They're also posted to our website under the upcoming events section, so if you didn't get the hard copy or email, you can also go to the IPRO website and SPAC the registration for those calls. For that second quarter, we have, and moving forward, we have scheduled the Home Health Quality Improvement Intervention Package calls on the second Wednesday of each month, again in that 9 to 10 a.m. time slot. And as always with our calls, we're going to be recording them and posting them to the website, so if you're not able to get on the calls at that time, you can listen to them after the fact. So with that, Jody, I'd like to open the lines up for any questions with regards to emergency care planning.
Thank you. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question or if you have a follow-up question, please press star 1 to signal. As a reminder, if you're using a speakerphone, please be sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. And we'll pause for just another moment.
As Jody's pausing for questions, I just want to remind everyone that the information we reviewed is all embedded within that large intervention package posted to the campaign website. But also know that there's a fast track. I believe this month it's 2 pages plus the sample emergency care plan that you can also download and review if you don't have an opportunity to view the larger package. But again, the larger package provides you with many, many other additional resources and tools that are helpful. Any questions, Jody?
There are no questions at this time.
Okay, great. Now, as If you haven't had the opportunity to go and download, if you have any questions, if you would like our help in customizing your emergency care plan, or just would like us to review your reports with you, I would encourage you to call us. We are going to conclude the emergency care planning portion of the call, and I'm going to ask Jody to stop recording the call. And if you would, we have about 10 minutes, and what I'm going to do is provide you all with the new